time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's time for episode 189 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a special guest in Ashley Victoria Robinson, creator of a new book, Apollo 9, from Top Cow Comics. We talk about how she got involved with the project, as well as other writing that she's done in comics, and some other things that she does that I think you'll enjoy, including the Red Shirt Diaries and comic reviews, which are all available at Majorspoilers.com. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I want to welcome to the podcast Ashley Victoria Robinson, who does a lot at Majorspoilers.com as well as me. You do a lot of good things on there. You write reviews, your Red Shirt Diaries, and not only that, you're a comics creator. So how are you doing today, Ashley?
I'm doing really, really well. How about yourself?
Doing good. It's good to talk with you. And why don't we go right ahead and dive into the comic that you've got coming out. Is it called Apollo 9, Apollo IX? How does this go?
I call it Apollo 9, but people can call it whatever they want as long as they buy it. Okay. I'm not too picky.
Now, this is out from Top Cow. And you were telling me just a little bit before we started to record about this is part of a series.
It is. Top Cow has this really amazing character called Aphrodite 9. She's a sentient android in the future, and she has a bunch of brothers and sisters who are also named after Greek gods. And Aphrodite is special because she has probably the best sense of morality. And what happens when these gods die is their consciousness can be downloaded into a new body, and Aphrodite's in her original body, and her, I guess, purity of spirit ties her into the artifacts that people will know from the Top Cow universe. Mm-hmm. And so some of the Top Cow writers got the chance to play around with some of her less morally pure siblings for a series of one-shots that are coming over the summer. So I picked Apollo because they said he was a sexy evil scientist, and I thought that sounded fun.
Okay, yeah. I'm just kind of curious, how did you get involved in the project? Did you know somebody there? You had done something at Frazinoscope before. Were they aware of that work? How did this happen?
I actually won the Top Cow talent hunt a couple years ago, and so I did a one-shot with them, and then I bothered Matt Hawkins to give me more work for a while, and then I just got an email. It felt like it was out of the blue. I'm sure it was much more well-planned than that, asking if I wanted to take part in these one-shots, and I was like, yeah, of course. And then making comics is always a very quick and panicky process, and so we started that, and now it's going to be a real thing.
Wow. Are you excited about it? I mean, you've probably seen printed pages of it by now, have you?
I have seen the whole thing.
Wow. Great.
I'm excited. It's one of those things, too, where, you know, when you create something and put it out there, you open yourself up to criticism. Oh, so yeah. That's really scary.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not scarier than my desire to actually do it. So I'm pretty happy with it. And it's got a cover by one of my favorite comics artists working right now, so not much to complain about.
Great. Now, when's it coming out? When can we expect this to be in the comic stores?
It comes out on Wednesday, August 12th.
Wow, so this Wednesday.
Yeah.
Very cool. Oh man, we'll have to get out to the stores and make sure we get it. Is it going to be available digitally as well?
Yes, Top Cow is really great. They put everything out same day digitally. You can get it either through the Image site, you can get it on Comixology. Anywhere you get your digital comics, you can get Apollo 9. And if you're in the Los Angeles area, I'm doing a signing at Earth 2 in Sherman Oaks. So come by and see me.
Oh boy. Do you know what time that's going to be?
It's going to be 6 to 8 Pacific time.
Okay, so that's good. So people can plan for that. And now, why don't we talk a little bit about the book? Because I'm real fascinated about it. We were talking a little bit before, again, I was mentioning the fact that sometimes when there are gods or demigods or semigods in books, that's kind of a cautionary tale because they don't have the restrictions that humans do. And so I thought your story was a really good example of that, that there's a lot of things going on in the book that I think that we as human beings ought to pay attention to, because there are ways that we should not be behaving that they do sometimes in here. So where did the inspiration come for this story? How did this come to be in your mind when they offered this to you?
Well, I think I'm pretty fortunate to be a writer in 2015 because I have the whole pantheon of Greek mythology behind me to pull from, you know? Mm-hmm. And I picked Apollo because the description that I got for him was like, you know, evil scientist who will use his sex appeal to get whatever he wants. And I was like, yeah, like I could go for that. That'd be fun. Like what? Smart, sexy guy. Okay.
Well, I might meet that person at some point, huh?
Right? Yeah. Then I had to write a pitch and I was like, oh, I have no ideas. But we were very fortunately plied with some source material to take a look at. And so I immediately seized on the idea of, well, he probably doesn't leave his lab. He's always there working and what he's working on has to be perfect. And when I think of future worlds, and it's probably very Star Trek influence, I always think of transporters. Mm-hmm. And there's no transporters in the way that you would think of beaming or something like that in the world of Aphrodite 9 and Apollo 9. So that was the spark. It was like, we're going to make a transporter, mm-hmm. and we're probably going to kill a couple people along the way.
It wouldn't be a comic if we didn't do that. So that'll work out perfectly fine.
Yeah, and that's kind of my MO, actually. Most people, I would say, know me in my writing from Retro Diaries, which is very comedic, but... Mm-hmm. Like the first play that I ever wrote, which was the first thing that I ever had kind of be published or produced in like a meaningful way, like I killed the protagonist at the end of it. So I tend to create characters that I really, really like and then murder them. And that's what I did in this comic.
Well, you don't always do that. You don't want to give away your secret there on that. We want to make it so that people don't exactly know what you're going to do. So you do that sometimes is what we'll say.
I do that sometimes. Yeah. There's a bunch of new characters here. You don't know which one's going to buy it.
Now, it starts out really interestingly. We can probably talk a little bit about how it begins because you're talking about the transporter thing and they're beginning to do a test on one of the transporter devices. Mm-hmm. And, of course, at the very beginning, if that worked out, why, we wouldn't have anything to do for the rest of the comic. So it doesn't necessarily go according to plan. And poor old Mr. Apollo, he ain't quite happy with all that good stuff.
He's not. And he's got to enlist the help of his pseudo-boyfriend, Eros, which is a name that people might recognize from Greek mythology, because I really took that naming to heart, to bring in a scientist who perhaps can look at it from a different way. And so that's where we meet a character named Psyche, who is in Greek mythology very tied to Eros. Mm-hmm. And they have to kind of vie for the position of, I guess, brilliant assistant. Like, who's going to solve this problem? Because that could really change both their lives. And that's where the conflict comes from, is the jealousy between them to be the favorite, to be the heir apparent, the next in line, as much as there can be one in a world where sentient robots don't die.
You know, one of my very favorite parts is when Apollo's searching for somebody to take over on the prom. There's a page where he's going through, you know, Eros has provided a couple of people for him to talk with, and the first one has an interesting situation where he has obviously been up to something that Apollo isn't going to like, and it's visible what he's been doing, and Apollo doesn't care for that very much, but he's kind of surprised.
Yeah, Apollo's a very judgy character, and I like to think of him sort of like Sherlock. If you have one little weakness, he'll find it, and then that makes you're not useful to him if you're going to be impeded by something in any way. So it's him moralizing on someone when he kind of refuses to take morals upon himself and his work.
Mm-hmm. I really get a kick out of the second one. The second one is an older lady. And you have to really feel sorry because he holds no bards back on her. Just basically, he says to her he wants somebody who can perform at peak physicality. Because she's an older lady, you kind of get the sense that he does not have any interest in that kind of person working for that. She somehow wouldn't be able to do, you know, what he's referring to, I'm not exactly sure. But
both of those are kind of meant to be super vague because... Okay. I don't want to actually insult anyone, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. I think it's more interesting that way if he keeps it vague, like, well, look, you're not going to perform at peak physicality in any way. So my hiring policy stops at 35. He wouldn't be a good HR man.
No.
Apollo.
I felt sorry for her. You know, that was the thing that I didn't think it was an insult so much as I felt sorry for her because, you know, she's obviously gone through all this agony to go and get and meet with him. And he basically dismisses her out of hands. You know, right?
Yeah. And their lab is underground. So it wasn't easy for her to get there. And I think that the artist rendered, like, I think she's quite lovely in that frame. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that you said you feel bad for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, of course, we get to Psyche. That's the next thing that starts to happen. And she's impressive because of her knowledge of science. And how she does that. Now, I got to ask you, of course, are you much into science as well? Did you know these kinds of things that she talks about? I always love a woman scientist because, you know, it was used to be that women didn't have that role. And then, like, when Star Trek Voyager came around, you had a woman engineer in it, even though she was...
Alana Torres, yeah. Yes.
And so I always felt for that. I just liked seeing, because, you know, men can be everything. Men can be a scoundrel. Men can be a hero. They can be the bad guy, the good guy, the in-between guy. But a lot of time women tend to fall into very defined roles, and I always love it when, like with your character, she's not exactly a very specific person. She's got lots of different angles to her that I really like. I just want to tell you that I thought Psyche was one of the best parts of the book. I like her character.
Oh, thank you. She's my favorite. She's my magical girl. I'm interested in science, but not so much in engineering. Like, I'm really interested in, like, biology. In another world, I was going to be a zoologist and live with the apes. Mm-hmm. So I did a lot of research because Matt Hawkins, who's kind of one of our fearless leaders at Top Cow, and you'll know him from Think Tank and the 9 other books he's writing. Mm-hmm. He's a big science guy. Mm-hmm. So I knew when I pitched, I was like, okay, well, I better have something that, in theory, like, seems correct because, you know, transportation technology is far beyond what we can do. So I did a lot of research. Psyche has a very specific point of view based on her surface world job that she's going to bring to this. So I did a lot of research on that and kind of how I could twist that into making a transport, you know, or that kind of engineering. And then I also, there's a point where we're talking about different isotopes and different fuel sources. Mm-hmm. And I wrote what I thought sounded really cool. Mm-hmm. And then I looked up like half-lives and the power of certain atoms. And I was really wrong. And I had to change it to what didn't. I mean, it still sounds cool, but I'd actually conform my writing to true science and science facts. So, because someone's going to read it who's an engineer and who knows about these things, and I would hate if they were really enjoying themselves and then, because I didn't do adequate research, they come to not like these characters.
That would be sad, because it's a good book and the characters are very vibrant. And the one sequence that you're kind of referring to is when Apollo was talking to Psyche about stuff, and she's asking him questions as, have you considered this and have you considered that?
Yeah.
You get a lot of respect for her at that point, because he's the head science guy, and she's holding her own talking with him about that, which I came away with. And I just thought that was great, because, you know, if you're Eros, you're probably sitting on the side, and you do see him off panel, sorry, almost in the background, and he's not very happy listening to this discussion going on, because she very likely could replace him or be the person that ends up being his assistant, based on this conversation.
Yeah, and one thing that I really wanted with that scene was he's physically behind Apollo. Apollo's not looking at him. There's no focus on him. And because they are two men, I think it's not perhaps the most original dichotomy, but then to have, you know, a sort of a small female come in who appears ethnically different than them, as much as ethnicities exist in this world, for me as a female writer, is something interesting to do. And Top Cow has a lot of really badass ladies, and I also wanted to live up to that. Sarah Pizzini is a good bar. So
the one time she speaks to Eros, she refers to him as a helper monkey. Which, of course, he does
she's kind
not,
of a jerk.
Yeah, he does not like. My impression is that he's used to doing that kind of stuff. And so to have someone do that to him really ticked him off, which was really interesting to me. I just thought that was kind of cool. It's fun to watch people who are used to doing something have the same thing done to them, and they often don't realize what's happening, that you're showing us how his reaction would be in that same circumstance. And, you know, it's a lesson for us to go back and say, man, you know, am I doing that to people? Am I treating people that way? And then when they come back and do it, do I realize that I'm doing that? So right there was a very succinct object lesson for us as humans. So I like that a lot. I like the whole section.
That moment may or may not be based on a memory from my childhood. So.
Okay.
I'm glad it translated.
Yeah, because I wonder, am I doing things to people that I wouldn't want done to me kind of stuff? And so I really like that quite a bit. And of course, as we progress through the book, things start to develop and we get back to where we started.
Yeah, we have a mirror scene.
Yeah, I love that. In a comic, I love nothing better than starting somewhere. And then we get back towards the end of the book and we end up somewhere similar, but with some differences. When you wrote that, was that your intention to tell the story in that way?
It was, and it's also a thing I love in television where you either start in a scene and you come back and it's slightly different, or you come back to the same scene. Mm-hmm. So it was always my intention to start and have the moment of, I guess, the highest drama, the climax of the story, be in that transporter room in that lab. And I think it's so beautifully drawn and colored. Like, it's so bright and kind of scary. There was no way we weren't going to go back and hang out with all the green coloring and the green lighting again.
Well, I thought it was really good. I'm glad you brought that up, because that was something I did want to talk about, was the art and the choice of colors. The great thing about the art is very easy to understand who's who. I really like that a lot, because sometimes in comics you'll have, especially when there's scientists and stuff involved, they all kind of have that sort of a...
Lab coat look?
Yeah, that was one of the things I was looking at thinking, they don't look all that science-y. They actually look more like sci-fi-ish. And to me, being able to, of course, different colors of hair and the facial expressions and things like that, I really like that. And you're right, the greens, of all the colors, those are the ones that stand out to me going over the pages. And I just love the choice of the kind of a lime green in some levels and other colors and stuff. And so I really like the way that that all came. Visually, it's stunning. You can't help but look at it and go like, whoa, you know, kind of stuff. I love a comic that can do that, because some comics are very dull when it comes to use of color. You know, it's very blasé, and, you know, visually, you might have a great story going on, but you don't get pulled along visually. But you and your artist here have done just a wonderful job on both levels of getting us interested in what's happening. And literally, when I get to the end of the book, I go, oh, that's not the end, is it? Oh, no, not that. So, very interesting. And I really like the story. As I say, I think you should be congratulated for doing a wonderful story on multiple levels. Wonderful things going on. So, it's just such a great thing. And I'm just curious, it says end at the towards the end of the story. Do you have any more stories you might do with dear old Apollo?
Well, this is just a one-shot. They only hired me to write the one issue, but if everyone likes it enough, then hopefully I could do more. I would love to, because I think he's such an interesting character, and I had such a good experience working on this story. So, hopefully. So,
really good. Well, I like the nine stories. I've read some other ones that have come out previously, and so I've all liked all of them. I think that that's a very creative and very different kind of comic storytelling. And, you know, I read so many Long John stories, and much as I love them, I'm so grateful to find something that's different. And your story is very different to me. My reading diet is a constant search for variety, and your book really, your book really helped meet that really strongly, and I was very glad to read it. It's just terrific.
I was fortunate to be handed a world that was already really interesting, but also allowed to play. Like, I got notes on this like every writer, but I didn't get anything like, oh, this is, you know, you've done this horribly and you'd fix it. It was just like, well, can we grammatically say this instead? And I think, you know, that's one of the great things about the way Top Cow works is they give us a lot of freedom to play. You know, at least this is my take on this. It truly is. And there's no impeding it. And Fernando's as well, the artist, and Chris, the colorist. But I also do the thing where I send a lot of reference photos. So, and it's funny to see the comic, you know, to see my early copy of it and to be like, oh yeah, I sent a bunch of pictures of The Matrix and that's why it's very green. Or, oh yeah, I sent this picture for Eros's hair and that's why it's coiffed just so. And it's interesting to see it all come to life. Because it's so different but so wonderful compared to what it was in my head when I was writing it.
See, that's a good thing, because artists don't necessarily know the kind of, even though you try to describe it, you know, artists think visually. And, you know, as a writer, you probably think more in terms of words and phrases and things like that. So if you can give them a visual reference, that really helps them, in my opinion, to do a really good job. At least communicate the story you want to communicate.
Yeah, and I mean, I can't art, I can't draw or anything. So I always send a note where I'm like, I would really like it to be this way, but... you know, you're the professional artist, so please take your liberties. Like, I would never presume to be like, draw it exactly like this.
Yeah, if that's the case, you just put photos in there. You wouldn't have to get the artist involved.
Right, so, exactly.
So that's a good thing. Well, it's really a great book. I highly recommend it to people. Be sure to pick it up this Wednesday at your comic book store. And if you don't have it there, if you have to go digitally, I recommend getting it digitally. Because I'm looking at it on my iPad screen, and man, it really just pops off of the screen. I really love the way that it's done. It's just a great, great, great story and great art to go with it, too. So I wish that happened more often in comics, but I think you all accomplished quite a great thing here.
Thanks. That's so nice.
Well, why don't we talk a little bit? You'd also had done a Xenoscope story before this.
No, I did another Top Cow story.
Oh, another Top Cow. Okay, sorry. I got that all backwards.
That's okay.
You want to talk what that story was about?
So I got to do a backup in an anniversary issue, which was Witchblade 175, written by Ron Mars, creator of Kyle Rayner. So that was really cool. And basically, I have free reign to tell kind of whatever story I wanted to tell in the Witchblade world, I guess, in that timeline. And I told a story about Sarah Pizzini, who is the New York police officer. I was going to say policeman, but she's definitely a lady, mm-hmm. who wields the Witchblade, and her partner, Patrick Gleason, because Patrick was always a character that I loved when I was reading Witchblade growing up. Mm-hmm. And it's the four times that Sarah saves Patrick and then the one time that he actually saves her. Mm-hmm. And six-page stories, for anyone who doesn't know this, are way harder to write than 22-page stories. Like, so hard. And I did a lot of drafts on that, and I worked really, really hard. And I think Betsy Gonya, my editor, has some of the most patience of anyone ever. But it was a really great crash course in working in comics, because you're like, oh, it's six pages, so I have so much less responsibility. But then you're like, but it has to be good in only six pages. Mm-hmm. And that's the tricky thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a storyteller, you don't want to give somebody a chintzy story in six pages. You want to give them something that makes them go, wow, I'd like to have more of that.
You know? Exactly.
And so the thing of it is, and so many people do chintzy six-page stories. I have read many books which they have multiple little stories going on, and almost none of them are memorable. You know, you struggle to read them, and then you kind of go, well, okay, well, you know, that really didn't do anything for me. But I think you did a good job with that, because I got a chance to read that too. And again, it's important to pull the reader in. You know, when you got to six pages, I felt like I'd read a much larger story in a good way. And so to me, I thought that was, you know, very well done. And I just think that as a writer, I think you've got quite a nice future ahead of you in comics and probably in other forms.
I can only hope, because I have a bunch of day jobs right now.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow. Okay. Well, good stuff as far as that goes. Now, I always like to ask women who are working in comics, what's your perspective as to how being a woman working in comics is now? Is it easier than it used to be? Do you still feel a burden to kind of like work harder to prove yourself? How does that go as far as your feelings about women in comics?
I've been super fortunate in working with Top Cow because my editor is a lady, so she comes with a certain level of understanding. Mm-hmm. I would say that for me personally, like, more of the struggle, and it's not really a struggle, is ideas about representation and how you want, you know, characters to come across. Like, I would hate someone to read a character, a female character that I've written, and feel that I had done a disservice. Mm-hmm. And that really speaks to Psyche, because she's a character that I created just for the story and the way that I portrayed her and putting her in a position of power. Yeah, it's more of a feeling of responsibility. Like, the actual process is not, I don't know if it's changed in it. I've never been a man writing comics, so I'm sure when, and I'm going to say when, a lady gets to write Batman as the single most famous character in comics, I would assume there would be more of a burden there and more judgment there. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I chose to write a title about a male character, and I don't know if that gives people pause, but I picked it because Apollo was a character that I was interested in. Mm-hmm. Also because Ryan Cady picked Athena before I got a chance to.
Ah, okay. So sometimes the sequence matters in these things.
Yeah, it does. I was actually the last person to answer. We got an email that was like, you know, what are some characters you'd be interested in writing? And I was the last one to get to it. And I was like, oh, crap.
Well, you never know. There might be a chance again. So if they do another round of these things, maybe you can come in first and get your pick of the litter when you
right.
do that stuff. So that would be really cool.
I'll just call Matt Hawkins again and be like, hey, man.
Next time I want this character.
Yeah. No, I would definitely, if I was given the choice, I would write more Apollo. He was so much fun to play with.
Hmm. Very cool. Now, before I let you go, I do want to talk about this other project that you do real well in, and that's the Red Shirt Diaries. This is
yeah.
Star Trek, and I'm kind
also
of
a female lead.
Yeah, how about that? That's a great thing, too. Do you want to talk about how this project came to be? Because, you know, you don't get a lot of Star Trek projects with female leads, so I have to applaud
it's
you
true.
On that one. So how did this come to be?
I had this idea probably about 4 years ago now. I've never seen all of the original series episodes in order, and I'm a big Star Trek fan. Mm-hmm. And I was like, maybe I'll go back and watch them. I'll do like a vlog style review of them, you know, or something like that, because vlogs are very big inexplicably to me. You know, they're a huge thing on YouTube. And then a couple years ago, I met Jason Inman, who works in YouTube and has a very successful channel. And I was like, very sheepishly, like, I was very nervous about it. I was like, yeah, I had this like idea for a Star Trek show, mm-hmm. and I don't know, it seems really hard. And he was like, no, it'll be super easy. We'll do this, 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 and this. And then he, for all intents and purposes, produced it. I helped as much as I could. Mm-hmm. And I co-write the episodes with him. And then in our second season, we have a writer's team. We have, I think, 8 people who contributed episodes.
Wow.
which was really great. It's also, I live in Los Angeles and I'm here to be an actor and a writer. And one of the best ways to do that is to act and write in your own things. Mm. You know, it's the same thing if you're, you know, trying to break into comics, like producing work, work begets work. And I think that's really, really true. And kind of the cool thing about Star Trek, when you're approaching it from a fan film perspective, is they're pretty okay with letting people play in that property. You know, as long as you're not doing anything mean-spirited. And Richard Diaries is definitely a piece of parody. I play the lowest-ranked security officer on the Star Trek Enterprise. So it's kind of like the TNG episode Lower Decks. There's 10 episodes out right now. Our second season drops in September, and there'll be 20 episodes. So we'll have done the entire first season plus a mock time by the time we're through with it.
Wow. Well, that'll be good, because classic Trek now, of course, with the movies coming out, there's a renewed interest, I think, in the original Star Trek. And I think you...
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah, you're just at the right time. You couldn't have picked a better time to do these things, in my opinion, too. I haven't had a chance to watch them all. I like the ones that I've seen a lot. Have you done anything sort of a memorial thing for Leonard Nimoy?
Other than cry a lot?
Yeah.
Jason and I host the Geek History Lesson podcast for Major Spoilers, and we did an episode called The Six Best Spock Stories. And that was how we memorialized him. We shot all of season two of Richard Diaries before he passed, and Spock's a character in it. But yeah, it was the day I was registering to go to San Diego Comic-Con, and I got the message, and then I literally just like cried through the entire registration. So
it's funny because I just came back recently from the Tampa Bay Comic-Con, and there was a guy that was like 7 feet tall. He looked like Spock incredibly, and his voice even sounded like Spock.
Oh, I think he's a cosplayer called Vegas Spock.
Oh, is he? Okay, could be.
Yeah. I think he's going to be at Star Trek Las Vegas this weekend.
Very good. Because there was another guy would come through, and it was just hilarious to watch the two of them stay in character and see each other. You know, they looked at each other, and they quizzically, each one had an eyebrow go up, and they kind of back and forth, eyeing each other over. And then all of a sudden, they stood side by side so we could take pictures of them.
That's so awesome. That's what one thing I really appreciate about cosplayers is when they can really get into it. I just think that's super fun. And same thing in Halloween. Like, I like to go overboard at Halloween and just pretend that I'm actually that person. And that was Spock 2 years ago, so.
Cool.
Keeping it relevant.
Very good. Are there other projects you're working on that we should be aware of, Ashley?
I have two commercials on TV that people can see me in. I'm in an Intel commercial with Jim Parsons of The Big Bang Theory.
Really?
Yeah, I'm like gaming on a computer, and he comes over and is like, you know, Intel computers are faster. Then we, he tries to fist bump, and I kind of give him a stinky face. So
I'll have to keep my eye out for that, because I've seen his commercials, but I haven't really paid close attention to them. I'll have to pay a lot closer attention to that.
So that's me. And I have a Barbie commercial that drops this week.
Oh, really?
And totally other end of the spectrum, and I'm captain of the soccer team in that. I haven't seen it yet, but I played soccer for 4 hours in the morning. So
wow, very cool. Well, Ashley, you certainly keep busy, and it's great to see somebody as talented as you getting a chance to strut your stuff like you do. So very good stuff, and of course you write great reviews on Major Spoilers as well, and
all the time,
all kinds of stuff you do. So man, I just never know when you get a chance to take a breather and all these things that you're up to.
I don't really.
It's really great. So obviously you invest a lot of time and effort and make it quality stuff, whatever you're working on. So I think that's a great thing.
That's so nice. Can you write all my reviews?
Well, I tend to only talk to people or write about things I really like. So I really like your stuff. So that's why I'm talking with you. So I think it's great stuff, Ashley.
Thank you.
Okay, and hopefully we get to talk to you sometime soon, but I'm going to keep my eye out for the Intel commercials and can't wait for the Red Shirt Diaries to come back. And again, this Wednesday, this is your chance to get Apollo 9, issue number 1, a one-shot, so be sure that you pick that up.
Yeah.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time when we'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.